Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Flight Centre Limited Full Year Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, the 27th of August, 2013. And I'd now like to hand the conference over to your first presenter for today, Mr. Haydn Long, Investor Relations Manager. Thank you, sir, and please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for dialing in today for our full year result presentation. As usual, I'm joined by Andrew Flannery, our CFO, Melanie Waters-Ryan, our Chief Operating Officer, and Graham Turner, our Managing Director. Shortly, Flannery will run you through our achievements for 2012-13. Mel will outline the major strategic initiatives that are underway, and Skroo will share his thoughts on our outlook for 2013-14. Before handing over to Flannery, I'll briefly run you through a couple of highlights for the year. As you all know, Flight Centre extended its growth trajectory during 12-13 with record profit and sales results achieved. I think PBT has now exceeded the prior year 16 times in 18 years as a public company. Strong shareholder returns were delivered, with Flight Centre the fifth best performing top 200 stock during 2012-13. Importantly, we continued to invest in the business through expansion in the key projects that you'll hear a little bit more about later on. The company is very much focused on the future and will target further growth in 2013-14. At the end of this presentation, you'll have the chance to ask Skroo and Flannery about our future plans or any other topics that you're interested in. Unfortunately, Mel is travelling to the UK and won't be able to join us for the Q&A, but she will be back in time for our roadshow next week. I'll now hand over to Flannery.
Yeah, thanks, Haydn, and good morning, everyone. Look, just to start off with, I guess, a snapshot of how we finished 2013. TTV for the year was just under 8% growth to around $14.3 billion. That TTV growth actually exceeds our both network and sales staff growth, which was around 5%, so that was pleasing. Our underlying PBT growth was $343 million, which is an 18% improvement on the prior year. That number actually excludes a $6 million increase in the building valuation, so if we were to factor that number in, we'd be looking at a PBT of around $349 million. Profit after tax has improved by about 20%, which again sounds very pleasing. Our ongoing investment in the network, the focus on L&D and other key projects, including blended travel and travel agent to travel retailer, ensures that future growth will be well and truly in place. Talking about our cash performance, which I know is always of interest to everyone, we finished the year with just over $1.25 billion in cash and investments, which again was very pleasing. This includes $433 million in general funds, which is up from $400 million the same time last year. And if you think a few years ago, back to June of 2009, we were at only $161 million, so obviously a very pleasing improvement in the last few years. Our debt is now at $46 million. We took the opportunity to repay a US loan of $60 million during the course of the year to take advantage of the Australian dollar strength at that point in time, which now appears to be good timing from our perspective, so we got lucky there. We have a very strong net debt position, which is in a positive position of just under $390 million. And again, as we've expected, the operating cash flow for the full year was around $370 million. Up on the prior year and reflects the seasonality in our cash flow where we see more cash leaving us in the first half of the year but being well and truly compensated for in the second half. And of course, dividends this year will be around $1.37, which again is very pleasing. It's an improvement of 22% on the prior year. And just to remind you all, that's about $400 million that we've managed to return to shareholders via dividends over the past 4 years, which we're obviously very proud about. Share price for the year finished at a record level. We were included in the ASX 100 during the course of the year and also the MSCI index, which has been very pleasing. And earnings per share of $2.46 is, again, another record. Just looking at the overall results, just a couple of things I would highlight. Income margin for the year remains slightly up on the prior year at 13.9%. Obviously very pleased that that's remained so strong. Again, for this particular year, I'd also highlight that the actual income mix is very consistent with past years in that 74% of our overall revenue comes from commissions and fees, and overrides and the other elements remain very consistent as far as the mix goes. Our net margins also very, very pleasing this year. 2.4% is an improvement on 2.2% from the prior year. It reflects the ongoing incremental improvements in our cost base that we've been targeting. Included this year has been a more efficient rental outcome, probably reflecting improved deals with landlords, and also a more efficient use of sales and marketing funds this year. The one thing I would highlight, though, is that we acknowledge that it's a very aggressive marketplace at the moment with many onshore and offshore competitors promoting their products very strongly. So we will always continue to make sure that our sales and marketing spend is an appropriate level, and that may increase in 2014 if necessary. I would highlight that the net margin has been a real area of improvement for us over the last few years. As I mentioned, it's been this ongoing cost focus, nothing substantial, just incremental. If you go back only 2 years ago, we had a net margin of 1.7, although our income margin was about the same level as it is this year. So it does show our focus in this particular area and our ability to continually find ways to eke out more cost efficiencies. The other highlight for this year is the effective tax rate. It's at around 29.5%. It does include a number of one-offs this year. Again, I would highlight that that's probably abnormally low. You can expect our effective tax rate to be around 31-32% on a normalised basis. The next slide talks about our five-year growth trajectory. Not too much really more to add on this, other than to say that we have been able to improve year-on-year over the last 5 years. Much against, I think, expectations certainly 5 years ago. I think it's something we're very proud about, and we don't see any reason why we can't continue that growth over the next few years to come. The results, as I touched on before, a couple of drivers behind it which worth highlighting. As I mentioned, the sales and shop network have improved by 5%. We've actually seen a 27% increase in our leisure and corporate BDMs, which is a really important factor for us because having those BDMs in place, particularly in corporate, is the main way we drive inquiry and grow the brand. So that's been very pleasing to see that. We have opened our 2,500th shop in July of the year, and we've actually opened our, we will open our 500th corporate business in 2014, which again we're very proud about. Probably the other thing I'd just highlight from the results this year is all 10 countries continue to be profitable. That's the third year that that's been the case. And very pleased to say that in five of those countries, they've recorded a record EBIT. Overseas countries now represent over 20% of our overall EBIT. And then 2013 contributed $74 million to the overall result. And there's a graph on slide 10 which actually shows how that overseas contribution has been increasing year on year for the past few years. The other thing I would highlight, of course, is that's been achieved in an environment where the Aussie dollar has been strong. So future translations, assuming the Aussie dollar weakens, should only help that overall mix. Again, we continue to mix business with leisure, which is one of Hayden's favourite terms. That simply reflects the fact that as a travel organisation, we're one of the very few around the world that is both a corporate travel management company and a leisure travel provider. And again, I would just highlight that corporate this year represents just over 31% of our overall group turnover. If you go back to 2009, it was only 23%. I'll just ask Mel to touch on the Australian result as MD for Australia.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Yes, as well as COO, I took over as the MD for Australia about midway through last financial year, and we had quite a pleasing year, a record year. We passed the $250 million EBIT result for the first time. Although TTV was only up 9%, which was reasonable, we certainly would still like to get that into the double digits. But what was also pleasing was it was a leisure-driven result as opposed to a corporate from the previous few years, which I think backs up the strength of our diversity. Corporate certainly as well prepared for the years ahead, but it was good to see particularly Flight Centre brand and very strong results in our niche businesses in the second 6 months of the year. Having said that, corporate travel in Australia did hit the $2 billion mark in sales, and we have some aggressive strategies, as Fino mentioned, with accelerated BDM growth, which we started last year and are continuing into this year to improve our corporate results. We also launched the second phase of our blended travel strategy in Australia, and in, I think it was February or March, we turned on international transacting on our Flight Centre brand website, and we're seeing the TTV on flightcentre.com increase more than 20% as we continue to focus on the blended model. So it was a good year for Australia and plenty of opportunity for the years ahead, but we're certainly well focused on what we need to do.
Just talking about the UK, again, a result that we're very proud about. For those that will be seeing us during the course of the roadshow, Chris Galanti from the UK and Dean Smith from the USA will be joining us, so a great opportunity if you ask them specific questions. But just to touch on the results of the UK this year, an EBIT result of $32 million, which is fantastic, and improved on the prior year record by 32%. The UK continues to be our second most profitable geography outside Australia, and it's our third largest sales generator after the USA. Again, nothing new here. The strategy that's served them well over the last couple of years is well in place. We've seen improvements both in the leisure and corporate business. Leisure represents about 50% of the business, with corporate the other 50%. The specialisation and hyperstore model have been working extremely well in the leisure part of the business. And we've seen a slight decline in corporate TTV this year, but we've seen a dramatic improvement in profit, which has been revisiting our customer base, which we've touched on in the past. Just to remind people, we have a very aggressive TTV expectation for the UK business set by Chris and his team. They hope to double their TTV from 2012 to 2017, where they expect to finish with around $1.5 billion in TTV, and that's in pounds. USA finished with a record $10.9 million, up 11%, and that's its third consecutive year of profit, which is it's very pleasing. Corporate remains a real driver of the overall result. It's now over 40% of their TTV, but also pleased to be able to say that Liberty and GoGo remain profitable. The US corporate business is now our second largest sales contributor outside Australia, which, again, I think reflects the growth of that business over the last few years and the potential for that business going forward. And the corporate business in the US is now within the top 10 travel managers, but still only represented in 15 cities. During the course of the year, they increased their operations in Philadelphia, Houston, Denver, and San Diego, with more to come in the next few years. And we also introduced the first hyperstore in Madison Avenue in October of 2013, and October of 2012, and that's performing very well. The one thing I would flag with the USA, and this is also true for India, we still have a reasonably large goodwill balance on the books. We need to see the Liberty and GoGo business continue to perform well for some time to justify that carrying value. And we continue to flag that in case it doesn't live up to expectations. Very briefly, just touching on the rest of the world, New Zealand had a great year on the back of their World Cup victory. They must be out spending money because they're now the third most profitable geography after Australia and the UK. They have 25% of the travel agency market in New Zealand, which is great, and continue to expand in niche areas. South Africa, again, a very good contribution during the year, particularly in their corporate business, which has been great to see. Canada had good sales growth, but unfortunately, the investments that we're making in some of the leisure businesses pulled down the overall profit result, and the FCB part of their business probably is not performing the level that we'd like to see, so some work to be done there. We did manage to expand into two new provinces, one being in the French-speaking part of Canada. So that's obviously been good for Screw to be practicing his French when he reviews that website. And then the last area, of course, is Asia and the Middle East. Greater in China and Singapore grew very strongly, albeit off small bases. Overall, leisure turnover for Asia and the Middle East was up 87%. India had an improved result, but it is probably one of our most challenging geographies, as we've touched on in the past. That continues to be the case, and I don't see any quick fixes for that business, so we'll continue to work hard there, but there is some ongoing challenges there. Dubai, EBIT was down on the prior year, but overall sales growth had improved, so we were pleased with their outcome. So that's the wrap-up of the overall results. as I mentioned before, available at the end to talk about anything in more detail there. There is a map showing the different geographies and how they perform both in local and Australian dollar currencies. But I'll ask Mel to touch on an exciting part of our business, which is the transition from travel agent to travel retailer.
Hi again, everyone. I think over the last couple of years, we've been talking about the strategic seven foci in the company. And whilst they're still in place, we've sort of transitioned them to a bit more of a story so that we can get a bit more of an emotional bind from our people. But I think it helps resonate in terms of what we're actually doing. And it's about moving us from being a travel agent to a world-class travel retailer of travel products to both leisure and corporate customers. So it's certainly not focused just on our leisure businesses. And being a world-class retailer means we really want to be the brand or the business that people identify with and go to and not just buy other people's products there. So it's very different from being an agent, which is really a middleman or a dealer in someone else's products. So this killer theme now sort of pervades all that we're doing, and it really has seven sort of sub-stories, if you like, that we're trying to write and make some development on in our business. So I'm just going to go through each of those briefly, and again, feel free to ask questions or flannel and screw at the end of this as I have to leave, sorry. But okay, the first one of these killer themes relates to brand and specialisation, and I thought I'd kind of explain this one with a little story. When I was in New York late last year for Thanksgiving, I was there for work, but I went out and was in a bar later on in the evening, and I met a few people and they were asking me what I did. I said I was there visiting from Australia, part of Flight Centre Limited USA. We owned the Liberty business. And the first question I got back, which you guys have asked us frequently over the last few years, is travel agent, doesn't everyone do it online now? And I immediately went into why would you book online when a travel agent has all these benefits? And I rattled off the top of my head, because we have all the products you can get online plus some others that you can't find online because not everything is transactable online. We know the real story. Every hotel bed looks or room looks great online, but you know, travel agents really know what's good and what's not. We do the work for you. Why spend hours looking around for travel when an agent will do all that for you? We get it right, and if we don't get it right, we make it right. And I think a lot of people make mistakes when they book their travel online. When things go wrong, we're there for you. We've all been seeing ash clouds and Qantas groundings and all sorts of things. When if you've booked it yourself, you won't be able to get onto anyone. Well, again, a travel agent or our guys will look after you. We're there for you 24/7, so whether it's 2 a.m. or 2 p.m., online or offline, and that's part of our blended strategy, we're there for you. And finally, you won't pay any more. So basically, you'd be an idiot not to go to us. At the end of this, by the way, the guy told me he'd book all his travel with Liberty from then on, so I thought I must have got it right. But I think what it did, it sort of resonated with us that we need to make sure every one of our travel brands and other brands is able to answer three questions that really make them the best alternative in their particular segment. And that is, what do they have that's special? What do they know that's special? And what do they do? And some of the things we've then followed on with from that time, we now have a very regimented brand planning system where we look at making sure those questions are answered and that the brand has a very specific CVP or customer value proposition. The Flight Centre 7 I've listed there as well in terms of that, particularly with Flight Centre brand, how we've taken those seven things I described earlier and put them into that business and made them part of its offering. The second key theme, part of this overall killer theme of moving from just being a travel agent to being a world-class travel retailer, is having unique product. So it's having our product, not just someone else's. So again, it's not being a dealer, but having something that's unique, different and interesting that you get through our businesses. Some of the examples that have progressed quite a long way on those is we've had black market flights and students now for about 3 years. But in Australia, Flight Centre launched its own exclusive range called Red Label on the 22nd of June, I think, and it's going global as we speak. Escape Travel, our holiday brand, has also lots of different product offers, My Time being one of them. We're also looking at this in our corporate business range. We've introduced Smart Stay in corporate, which is a unique offering with our hotel program. So again, very focused on making sure we have products that are not readily or easily or if at all available online, but certainly only available in our businesses. And there's a few examples of them in the next few slides with the Red Label airfares and the Bali bonus bundles, which is part of our Escape Travel offering, which also has an exclusive payment offering and interest-free ability to pay. The third key part of our theme from moving from being travel agents to being a world-class travel retailer is about having experts, not agents. We don't want our guys to be travel agents. We want them to be experts, and experts in terms of the particular brand they work in and what it specialises in. What's also good, and we're going out there much more strongly, is not only are our frontline people brand trained, and we have most things are brand-based training now, and we have expertise accreditation, but behind those guys on the end of the phone is a whole group of gurus, be it in flights, cruises, holidays, whatever the brand specialises in, that backs up that knowledge base. So lots happening in the world of training, and particularly lots of very modularised e-bite-style training that goes with the younger workforce that we have. The fourth key theme, that again part of this overall travel agent to travel retailer, is about redefining our shop spaces. And in the leisure brands, it's all about shops becoming retail spaces, and we've been working on this for a few years with our hyperstores. But more than that, making sure that our shops are not a place just to book travel, but a place that we display our wares. And very exciting, we're opening our biggest shop in Queen Street Mall in Australia in, I think it's in a couple of weeks, in September. And we're really playing with how we use our space and zoning it, very much like a department store does, where we're going to have different zones displaying, particularly things like Red Label, et cetera. Looking as well about our digital content and how we use that both in these hyper stores and local stores. In our corporate brands, we're talking about not being offices, and we're going to have a big focus on making sure that they become travel hubs, is the name we've come up with, and not just a booking office. And even just small things, like we're mobilising our consultants in store. We trialled this first at the Madison Hyperstore in New York, where we get our consultants out from behind their desks with iPads, talking to customers in a much more sort of casual basis, and that seems to be working quite well as well. So all of that's what's happening in the shop and the corporate travel hubs and wholesale as well, is about reinforcing those previous three themes that I was talking about. There's some pictures there at the New York Hyperstore where we've got one of our experts doing a little mini sort of session with customers about certain travel. Our fifth key part of moving from being a travel agent to a world-class travel retailer is blended access. And you guys have heard about the blended travel strategy. But again, this is just making sure that our brands are available at 2 a.m., at 2 p.m., online or offline, and that customers can either browse, buy, or just ask questions about their holidays or flights with our experts. And we're really quite along this path in Australia. As I said, we launched the international transacting back in February. We launched Consultant Select shortly afterwards, and we're incrementally improving our website more and more. Still a long way to go, but I think starting to really use that web as basically our biggest shop front. And there's some phases there that I won't go into at the moment, but we might do a little bit more of at the presentation in Sydney, but again, ask some questions. The sixth key theme, again, in this overall theme of moving from being a travel agent to a travel retailer is really using information a lot more effectively or as power, as we've stated here. We have a lot of information around two key areas. I'll describe them as profiles and patterns. So who are our customers and what sort of travelling patterns do they have? We've created an in-house data team, brought more of that expertise inside the company. We're doing a lot on profile management, not just in the corporate brands, but in the leisure brands, and really having a look at what sort of travel patterns that we can then go back and create better travel products for our customers, particularly things like one of the things we launched in Flights in a Brand, for example, was the Best of Both Worlds, where we're offering economy flights up to Asia and business class across to Europe for something like $3,000-$3,500. So again, and that's because we noticed that that's the sort of thing customers would want to do and we're doing, and it's going very well. The seventh key sort of mini story in that overall secular theme of moving from being a travel agent to a world-class travel retailer is really being a sales and marketing machine. I think being a sales and marketing business has been part of the 30-odd year history of Flights Unlimited. This is about taking it to the next level and really looking at our marketing and advertising. We're doing a lot more remarketing, where we're marketing to existing customers or existing bookings that customers have made to good effect. Looking a lot at our direct response and advertising, as I mentioned earlier, using digital in store and things like our perfect match concept, where we're lining up particular inquiries with experts in particularly that destination or type of travel. So it's been really about making sure our sales and marketing is best in the world. And I kind of describe this as the whole thing is to move people along the buying cycle. And we're seeing that. And then our customers help people, sorry, our consultants help people buy travel, not just sell it to them. So that overall makes up our kind of strategies now. And those themes you're going to hear a lot more about, so us being this world-class retailer of travel to both corporate and leisure customers. I'll hand over to Skroo now and have a look at this coming year. Skroo?
Oh, thanks, Mel. I hope everyone's still awake after that, but Mel's pretty excited. Mel's pretty excited because if Tony Abbott gets in, she's getting pretty excited about this paid parental leave. So you'll wait to hear the next segment of that story after September the 7th. I'm just going to give you a little bit of rundown on the guidance. We're initially targeting about 370 to 385 PBT, and this assumes that nothing terribly disastrous happens over the next 12 months, and we're certainly not writing off the fact that we might have some goodwill impairment in the USA and India, or India. It's obviously something we don't know yet. And that's about 8 to 12% growth on what we did this last year. July's been pretty good so far. August was up on last year, but still very early days, so really hard to predict what's going to happen over the next 12 months. During our budgeting process, we're hoping to get about 8 to 10% sales network growth. That'll be in terms of our sales people and our sales teams. And most of this is organic, as usual. We're looking at some acquisition opportunities. They're quite small, and generally this will involve a vertical rather than in all the countries. We're in the 11 countries. We've got plenty of growth opportunities to grow organically. We don't really need any more acquisitions, but there's a couple of vertical things that we're looking at there. $60 million in CapEx, which is pretty much in line with what we've been doing. And obviously we want to try to grow our profit and our productivity, and there's quite a few projects underway for that, but some of it was a little bit of what Mel was talking about there. Australia, we still believe we've got some growth opportunities here, and I think Mel mentioned a lot of the programs that we've got in play with the moving from a travel agent to a world-class retailer. And one of the other areas, Flanna mentioned that we've got reasonably strong growth in our corporate sales team, or BDMs, and we're certainly hoping to that will help us with the corporate sales this year and do a little bit better than last year. The US dollar, most of you probably have seen that the US dollar's come down against the Australian dollar's come down against the US. It's around 90 cents, I think. And we don't think this dramatically affects us. I think, people going to the States, I think it's mainly the fact that the American dollar's stronger rather than the other currencies so much, and it just means people going to the States might have to trim their budget back a little bit, maybe stay in 4-star instead of 5-star, or maybe stay a little less. This is what we traditionally find happens, so we're not too concerned about that at the moment. As it says here, we're not only relying on outbound travel. We do a fair bit of domestic. I think our domestic is still about 35 to 40% of our business, probably even more than that. This is a bit, I think most of you have heard from Flano and Hayden about the impact of the US dollar. We generally don't think that's the thing that makes the main difference. Generally, I think it's the value and the price of airfares that has the biggest influence, and airfares are still very good value. If not as cheap as they've ever been, relatively, and I don't see that changing much with the amount of capacity going out of Australia, particularly to Europe. The UK and USA, UK, as Flano said, they have a target to get to the 15 1,500 million pound. Is that right? 1,500?
Yep.
By, well, it was actually 1,492 by 2017. And generally, it's going pretty well there. They're growing at generally double digit each year. USA, we've still got a long way to go there. A 12 to 14 million EBIT is still pretty pathetic, but we're certainly getting good traction in the corporate, and the leisure's now seems to be reasonably consistently profitable, but obviously not as profitable as we want it. New Zealand, we hope that it has another good year, bearing in mind that about 10 years ago it did about the same amount of profit as it is now. So we've got plenty of opportunities to grow the profit there. South Africa's going pretty well. Canada had a very poor result in leisure, quite a good result in corporate. And obviously, if we can get our leisure, mainly the Flight Centre brand, working properly there, the results should improve considerably. Asia and the Middle East, we've still got, Flano mentioned that we are concerned about India. It's one of those, it's a market, it's a country that's very, very difficult to do business in, and anyone who goes in there actually needs their head read, I think. But we're still profitable, we're still, we did grow a little last year, and we're reasonably confident that things will keep going along okay, but we certainly won't be putting any more money in there. Capital management, seeing it's, I'll hand it over to our Chief Bean Counter to just run through this and look forward to answering some questions later. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Group. Obviously, one of the questions we get asked a lot about, I don't think I'm going to say anything new that men have heard before. So, fair to say that we have a cash balance in company funds of over $400 million at the end of this year. That's pretty consistent with our internal policy of having at least 3 months of operating expenses tied up in general cash to accommodate any unforeseen circumstances. As we've talked about before, we operate in a very volatile industry. We think having such a stockpile of cash is not only prudent but provides a competitive advantage at those tough times. We obviously have some thoughts on maybe some small acquisitions over the next 12 months. We've talked about that before, being around maybe some small businesses that we currently do business with. So some of that coming cash might be used in relation to that. But generally speaking, there's no plans at this point in time to see any return to shareholders outside the normal dividend payout ratio. I do know the directors will consider all options if they ever decide that we have excess funds and how that would be returned to shareholders. But certainly their preference, based on our modelling at this point in time, is that the best way to get a long-term benefit for shareholders is through an improved share price, and that might come through an enhanced dividend payout ratio, if that was the best way to get money back to shareholders if we had those excess funds. But as I say, that is not something that's on the horizon at the moment, but simply sharing with you some of their thinking if that was to be the case. I would acknowledge that the Travel Compensation Fund has been repealed in Australia, and that does free up some of our balance sheets management, but it has no impact on cash holdings, so it won't have any impact on opportunity for excess funds being released back to shareholders. So hopefully that answers your questions around capital management, but again, if you have any further questions, don't hesitate to ask.
Thank you. We might go to questions now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone keypad and then wait for your name to be announced.
Jessica, I might take the first question for Flano. Flano, there's been a change in our revenue reporting this year. It's outlined in the accounts, but probably not immediately obvious. For the benefit of the analysts who are on the call, could you just explain the change briefly?
Yeah, thanks, Hayden. Most people that are familiar with our financials will be used to seeing two lines in our revenue note. One is traditionally a grossed up revenue, and then a cost of goods sold for the principal component, resulting in a gross profit line. I think most of the analysts are aware that that has been a function of some UK requirements that this year we've been able to
resolved to remove that that kind of gross up of principal amount and the cost of goods sold associated with it. So hopefully it provides a much clearer understanding of what our true revenue is and removes what has been a reasonably complicated part of the accounts. Again, happy to answer any questions that people might have on that, but where you see revenue this year, we show the prior year comparative, but if you're comparing it to the prior year accounts, you need to compare it to what was previously referred to as gross profit. So, like I say, if anyone has any specific questions about that, please ask, but otherwise, hopefully the accounts as they are now are much better for the end user.
And your first question comes from the line of Russell Shaw of Macquarie. Please ask your question.
Good morning, everyone. Just a few from me. Just, Flynn, on the you mentioned the lower sales and marketing costs. I mean, it looked like a drop down about $8 million year on year, and normalising next year. What should we be thinking around that? Is sort of a similar levels as a percentage of revenue to what you had in fiscal 12?
Yeah, Russell, I think that's probably fair. Just a bit of background, we feel that the marketing team have done a good job this year in generating the level of inquiry that we've needed, but in a more effective way. They've tended to be using some of the more digital channels, and that's reduced cost of inquiry. However, and Scream, I want to talk about this a little bit later, we see certainly offshore a lot of the online travel agents being very aggressive with each other in particular. They're all competing for a share of voice, and we'd not be surprised if that trend continues here in Australia. So we recognise that we need to make that ongoing investment, and what level of inquiry is appropriate now may need to be bigger in the future, and with that will come a larger spend. So yeah, it's probably prudent to use the past trends is some example of that. I think it would be probably a little unwise to use FY13 as your model.
Okay, and then just I guess, Skroo, you alluded to the underperforming businesses in Canada and the US. I mean, what's been the major reason for the turnaround in the wrong sense on the Canadian business, given it had a reasonably strong FY12?
Good point. It's probably a combination of factors. We had the main leisure leader actually went on maternity leave. Unfortunately, over there they don't have the benefit of the baby bonus or that amount of leave. But it just interrupted that business over the last 18 months, and we now have a new leader there. And I'm pretty confident. I was just over there the week before last, and I'm pretty confident that the leisure results will improve. But there's no doubt in North America leisure is quite a difficult field. It's very competitive, not only with the online players, but a lot of the leisure market ends up in the Caribbean and Mexico and Vegas. So it is very competitive, and we are trying to move away from that commoditized product more into places like Europe, Asia Pac, and South America too. So we've got a multi-pronged approach there, and I'm reasonably confident the leisure results will improve, particularly in Canada, but also in the States in the next 12 months.
And I guess on the US, I mean, there's clear massive seasonality in that business versus some of your others. You are cycling a hurricane from last year. I mean, can we expect to see this company or this division get into a position where it's actually making money in both halves at some point?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I mean, I think it is partly the sort of product we sell there through the Liberty brand. You know, it probably too much emphasis on the commoditized holiday product, the Caribbean, cruising, Mexico. But we are moving more of our resources, to Europe in particular, and that's a much more consistent market. So if we can do that effectively, we will get to a stage I'd like to think where it is a more balanced, both halves are more balanced.
Thanks. And then finally, just on the outlook, you mentioned July and August trading was, I suppose, up on last year, but early days. Can you comment more specifically on the corporate market? Because it sounds like that slowed down in the second half in Australia in particular.
Look, our corporate, we think the corporate's still pretty strong. we probably didn't do as well in corporate in Australia and a couple of other places as we would have liked last year. And we, as I think Flano said, we do have some strategies to improve that. And yeah, we're reasonably bullish that corporate won't be too bad this year.
Great, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Tim Plume of CIMB. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Congratulations on another good result. Just the three questions from me. The first one, you guys had some pretty big PBT margin improvement in the second half of 13. It looks like a fair amount of this came from Australia. Could you walk us through some of the drivers behind this margin improvement in the second half of 13? And I guess, how should we think about that? How should we think about rolling that margin improvement forward into the first half of 14?
Yeah, Tim, I'm happy to take that. Look, the two major drivers for the improvement were the sales and marketing, which touched on earlier, and the second part of that was a more efficient rental outcome. And look, as we said before, I think sales and marketing, whilst it was a good outcome for us for this year, I think we're going to have to continue with our ongoing investment in there, so I wouldn't be factoring that into your model going forward. Rents, obviously, landlords are... we're dealing with on a case-by-case basis, I guess. Some landlords in A-grade locations are always going to be very aggressive and bullish. Other landlords wanting to have that certainty of tenancy are prepared to do more deals. I think overall we're pretty pleased with the outcomes we've got, but, retail's tough for everyone, including ourselves, and we'd like to see the landlords continue to reflect that in more realistic negotiations going forward. So, look, I think the second half of 2013 was a positive trend, but I wouldn't be factoring that in to continue for 2014. Having said that, we are constantly looking for incremental cost improvements, which we have been able to achieve over the last few years. I think we've talked before about how we've made some changes to our corporate wage model here in Australia. We felt that maybe was too excessive, and we expect to get some good benefits from that this year. So we might actually see a slight improvement in our people costs, which wasn't the case in 2013. So while some areas might actually go up on last year, some areas might go down as well, it's certainly something we've focused on.
Great. Okay. And just, sorry, my second question. In the past, you guys have spoken a lot about productivity improvements, reducing the administrative burden on your sales staff, et cetera. Is that continuing to be a focus going into FY14? And if it is, could you just give us a feel in terms of how you're looking to roll out those initiatives across the different geographies, please?
Tim, we do have quite a few projects that are now they're going probably a year or two, and we work on, this is in leisure, productivity is not an issue so much in corporate. So these projects are like the Universal Desktop, which is a GUI that's come into our shops. I think it's the 50th iteration is out now, so we are getting some benefits of that, for example, but we've still got a fair way to go. And there are other projects like what we call Quick Docs that should improve this, and you will see what we call our CAC, our commission average, consultant commission average, CAC, is moving up a little bit. We also have a sales program that called GSA, and certainly in some countries that's had quite a big impact. It hasn't had a lot of an impact in Australia yet. So they're some of the major projects, particularly in leisure, as I've said, and We're expecting there's going to be no magic about this. We have had some improvements in CAC or productivity. We've also talked about improving the efficiency too of taking away some of the red tape that's crept into our front line, and that is happening as we go along.
Great. And sorry, just last question. You guys started off last year with 5-8% PBT growth guidance. This year you're kind of looking at 8-12. Is there anything different within the business as it stands now compared to last year that makes you a little bit more comfortable in terms of giving a slightly higher initial guidance?
Yes, I think if the market stays very similar to last year, we feel probably a little bit more confident this year than we probably did at this time last year. Generally, just getting some improvements, as Flano talked about in corporate, but also some of the small efficiency gains and productivity gains in leisure. But it's very hard to predict for us because, you know, as you know, we're in 10 different countries and we're in quite a few different fields. So a lot of it does relate to incorporate to our BDM growth, or not only growth in BDMs, but you know, growth in effective BDMs, and just general growth in shop numbers and sales staff numbers as well. And we're probably a bit more confident we're going to get a little higher growth in some of those areas this year, which should hopefully flow on to results. But yeah, a lot of things could change. There's generally in the business sector, the outlook, from what I hear, is not very positive. And hopefully that won't affect us too much.
Great. Thanks, guys.
And your next question comes from a line of Mark Bryan of Merrill Lynch. Please ask your question.
Yeah, morning, guys. Very good numbers and great to see the outlook commentary. Just a quick couple, if I may. The new sales staff growth of 8 to 12%, could you please just give us a bit of colour on what that might be between new store openings as opposed to infills in the current network? And secondly, I'm just really interested in your outlook commentary. You seem to very much be positioning holiday product effectively as non-discretionary. But if you look in the UK, and I'm not thinking about your business in the UK, your business there is obviously doing tremendously well. But if you look at the UK market overall, where you've had basically 3 years of recession, you've had quite a serious deflation of the currency, it looks very much like in Australia we're going to go through similar conditions in the next couple of years and see obviously a similar economic climate coming through. Why will travel be different here?
Good question. And if you've got any good answers there, Mark, let us know. But I think we're looking for 8 to 10% of actual sales growth, and that generally that'll come through possibly around 8 or 9% actual store or business team growth, and also some incremental growth in staff numbers. So yeah, we'd like to think we'd get about 8% in shop growth and maybe 10% in sales staff growth. So which with a little bit of productivity and efficiency improvements will, you know, could give us that 12% at the upper end of what we're looking for. In terms of holidays being discretionary, I think the UK is a little bit different. Well, I certainly hope it is. Certainly we're in the UK, as you've identified, we're not really in that Mediterranean package holiday market, which has become very vertically integrated, particularly through some of people like TUI. And we're certainly involved in that market in Australia, you know, with the Bali, Fiji, Phuket. But I think that'll hold up pretty well unless the Australian dollar really dies. And I think if it does, people will holiday home more. And we still have quite a big part of our market in Australia. So we've got a certain element that even if there is a bit of a pullback from and perhaps just through general business conditions and economic conditions in Australia, we're reasonably confident that through either corporate, which with our build-up of our sales team and leisure through having that alternatives, I think the near-haul destinations, as I said, will probably hold up all right. Whether long-haul, America's quite strong at the moment, Europe's reasonably strong, they might come off a bit, but I think we can replace that reasonably well with domestic and New Zealand travel. But I guess that's going to be one of the things that aren't going to be clear for the next 12 months.
Thanks, Graham.
And your next question comes from a line of Peter Drew of Hunter Green. Please ask your question.
Oh, good morning. Just following on the margin question in Australia. So the cost containment in the second half was very good. And Flano, you've said that there's, you know, most likely an increase in sales and marketing and maybe a decrease elsewhere. Can you give us a bit more of some guidance as to what we can expect for OPEX growth in 14?
Yeah, well, actually, if you actually look at the margins, Peter, over the last couple of years, Yeah, we had a cost margin of 10.3% for the full year of 2012. We had a cost margin of 10.1% for 2013 for the full year. And for the second half of 2013, that got as low as 9.7%. So, look, I think as far as the cost margin goes, 9.7%, that's what we've said before, is probably unsustainable. But for the, you know, the efforts we've had in the rent, for the efforts we're having around our people costs, and just general economies that come with additional revenue, I would hope that we could keep that cost margin around that, you know, that 10.1% mark for the entire year. So, look, I think we've mentioned a few people before. I would like to think that we could get our net margin before tax to around 2.5% on an ongoing basis. And that will obviously largely come from cost improvement and assumes not too much of a decline in revenue margin. And clearly this year we're not too far away from that. So it is something we are focused on. And as I've said, it's always going to be incremental and not, you know, significant or substantial changes that's required. And being a high volume, low margin business, even a very small change can have a very dramatic impact on our bottom line. So it's something we're very focused on. So hopefully that provides you with some guidance.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thanks. And secondly, just in terms of the guidance for the US, if you add the first half 12 performance with the second half 13, you get a EBIT which is pretty much in the middle of your guidance. I'm just thinking, should we be expecting that there's some sort of cost investment this year that's not going to come through at EBIT?
I'm not sure exactly what you're saying there, Pete. Can you just maybe rephrase that a different way?
Just, the first half 13 result was impacted by a couple of things. So
Yeah. Looking
back at first half 12, probably a bit more of a normal result, and there was nothing really in the second half of 13 that was abnormal. And if you add those two together, you get about $13 million in EBIT. Your guidance is 12 to 14.
Yeah.
Commentary for corporate is quite positive. But you've sort of, I'm just wondering, is there something going on there, or is there a cost investment that's not going to come through at EBIT?
No, sorry. Thanks for clarifying. I understand what you're asking. Look, there probably is one significant change this year, this upcoming year that's not reflected in past years, and that's our commitment to grow the leisure business physically. And that physical growth will come from opening two new hyperstores, one in Boston, which is due to open around October time, and another one in Philadelphia, which is also due to open hopefully in the not-too-distant future. So as we know from our own experience, there will be some initial startup costs with those two new businesses, but for a longer-term benefit. In addition to that, we are looking to refit some of our existing Liberty stores to put some specialised teams in the back office to utilise the rentals costs more efficiently. That shouldn't require too much extra cost, but the initial startup cost of those individuals before they get their full customer base up and running might drag results down a little bit slightly. So both of those elements are factored into our current guidance.
Okay, and just the last question, just the $6.1 million benefit from the property reval, is that reflected in the Australian EBIT of 263?
Not all of that will be. Only about 5.5 of that, and the other $500,000 is reflected in the South African result.
Right, great. Thanks a lot.
And your next question comes from a line of Grant Saligari of Credit Suisse. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Good morning, and I'd also acknowledge a very good result. You make it look easier than it actually is. I guess just a couple of questions for me. One also on the US leisure business. Have you seen any improvement in net revenue margin coming through that business from mix? I'd just be interested in, I guess, what actually physically needs to change on the ground to get that higher proportion of long haul coming through that business.
There's a lot needs to change. I met with them in San Francisco about 10 days ago, and just going through where they're at, our productivity there is quite low compared to elsewhere, although our average file is reasonably high. So in leisure, And just, I think, one of the previous questions with the states is obviously with something close to $2 billion in actual sales there, whether it's a 13 or 15 million EBIT, it's sailing very close to the wind in particularly in the leisure area, so a very small movement either way can make a significant difference, particularly on the negative side. But we've still got a fair way to go, as I think I said before. The productivity is probably one of our major things, and trying to move not only greater productivity in the states in leisure, but also getting more traction in the market, particularly Europe, is a challenge with a brand like Liberty, which has been around now 60 years. So it's seen as a leisure brand. It's seen as a cruising, Caribbean, Mexican holiday brand, and unfortunately that product has become reasonably commoditized. So I'm afraid this is not going to be an easy change. We are working on it. We're bringing the flight expertise much more into the business, and I think this doesn't happen overnight, and I think personally this will have quite an impact over time, but it could take 2 or 3 years to really have a much better airfare expertise in there. And as a travel agent or a travel retailer anywhere, I think that will be one of the secrets there. Corporate, on the other hand, does look pretty good. Still plenty of potential. We're in 17 cities in the States now. Am I exaggerating?
15.
And we're opening another couple of cities this year, so mainly in the corporate traveller brand. So, yeah, it's quite positive, and but we're still totally committed to Liberty and making it work too.
Okay, that's helpful. Just a second question, if I could, just on the Australian leisure business. You've mentioned a few times that the scale of the domestic leisure exposure that Flight has. Do you have a sensitivity in terms of if there was a dollar of spending that shifted from international to domestic, the materiality, the impact on Flight?
No, look, we don't. I think I estimate maybe 40% of our business in Australia is domestic, but bear in mind a significant part of that will be corporate as well. We do have a significant leisure, but the corporate side of that's going to be quite big. I don't think it's going to make the dollar, even when the dollar was 46 cents, which happened a few years ago, or maybe 7 or 8 years ago. We still had reasonable overseas sales. It's just people will spend less, and we probably have to do much better in our marketing and advertising. So, but it is a fallback, and we still do reasonably significant domestic, but I can't give you any sort of sensitivity on that.
Oh, okay, thanks for that. Just one final one, if I could, just on the detail. There was actually quite a large receivables written off during the period, $13.5 million.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can just can shed on that in terms of whether it was a one-off, a large account, or whether this is sort of an accumulation of small accounts? Is there any additional colour on that?
Yeah, Grant, thanks for raising that. And I'm actually pleased someone reads the financials. No one ever really asked any questions about that, so that's pleasing to see. The answer to that is it is abnormally large for us. Traditionally our bad debts expense, tracks around that $5 million mark, which we're very proud about, given the size of the overall debtor book. This year we did have a few contributing factors to it. Each of them large by their individual size of the account, but collectively, not that large for the overall organisation. A couple of suppliers went down, Air Australia obviously being one, Kamuka being another. That cost us a couple of $1 million in lost overrides. We had a situation in the first half of this year where we had some outstanding creditors in South Africa that we had to write down. That was a couple of $1 million. And then we had one particular client that did go down in the corporate space that cost us a couple of $1 million as well. So that gives you a flavour. So, look, we'd like to think of those things as one-offs, but we just don't have that certainty. So the only thing I would acknowledge is, yes, it's unusually high for us, still very small given our overall debtor book, but something that we wouldn't like to see repeated.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Ron. I appreciate it. That's it from me.
And your next question comes from a line of John O'Shea of Bell Potter Securities. Please ask your question.
Oh, g'day, guys. Just two questions, if I may. Firstly, you gave some sort of colour around the sort of revenue split in terms of corporate and leisure. Just wondering if you could give us some more detail on the profit before tax split, what that came out as. And secondly, just around your guidance, obviously with the reduction in debt you've got this year, how much of that guidance, how much have you factored in terms of lower interest costs this year?
I'll start with the second one there, John. Look, the actual finance interest cost now in our accounts is very small. So I think you would have seen the number decrease from 5.6 million last year to 3.3 this year.
Yeah.
So look, any benefit we get from that is very, very modest in the scheme of the universe. So not a significant factor. Mm-hmm. In the relation to the first part of the question around profitability, look, I won't give you the exact numbers because it's something that we'd like to keep to ourselves, particularly with our competitors often listening in. But what I can share with you is that, as Hayden said before, about 31% of our overall TTV is corporate related. As we've talked about before, our income margin in the corporate space tends to be a little bit less by a percent or 2 percentage points. But the actual cost margin of servicing that business is more effective. So overall, the net margin that we experience in corporate is probably, say half a basis, say 50 basis points better than the retail business. So you can probably back work that out if you like.
Yep. Thank you.
And your next question comes from a line of Ivor Rees of Wilson HTM. Please ask your question.
Good morning, folks. Just a question on the blended business model. You mentioned that you launched the international product in Australia. Could you give us the date when you had all of your international product loaded in Australia, whether you've got 100% of all of your Australian product online yet, and also when you plan the first rollout of the similar product in the UK and the US?
Yeah, thanks, Oliver. Yeah, look, I don't know the exact details, but we went in about March, I think, we launched the international. Bear in mind that you'll never get the same amount of product online as you have in store because you have different sources of product, and it's only the more simple stuff that you can feed through online. So no online travel agent or travel website will ever have all the product online. We've got a significant part of our inventory online. We've still got a long way to go with some of the land areas in Australia. Yeah, that will take time because particularly packages and that sort of thing tend to be a lot harder to do. And that's one of the reasons I think people use a travel agent so they can, even if they can book their airfare online, that they can get advice on the hotel and that. In terms of the states and the UK, Liberty, in the States, we've had flightcenter.com online for the last couple of years. And Liberty is going, I think it's going almost
first half, late the first half.
Yeah, in the next couple of months. The UK is still a way away from having a transactional site there. We are working on it, and it should be in play in this financial year. They don't consider it very important there at the moment because they don't really want to compete in the online space. There's no need for them there. They've got plenty of growth opportunities in other areas. But it is one of the I don't know how many websites we have around the world, but they are largely built and managed here in Australia, and we obviously have a limitation as to how many we can actually do at one time. So we're not in a huge rush there, but in places like South Africa, New Zealand, Canada is transactional. We are moving towards those transactional sites, and most of them will be online, certainly this financial year.
Actually, just to add to that, South Africa, for instance, actually went live last night with a transactionable site. And the South Africa for us was a priority because we reviewed the marketplace over there and didn't see anyone doing it very effectively. So while you might expect our attention to be focused on some of the other larger nations, we thought strategically it made more sense to go to South Africa first, and very pleased to say that actually happened only 24 hours ago.
Fantastic. That's a great rundown. If I could just might ask one supplementary question about the Australian business there. At the half year, you gave us some really good guidance on how the niche businesses, the niche shops, corporate travel, and the split of revenues was going there. Did that trend of the growth in the niche shops accelerate in the second half relative to your traditional leisure shops?
Yeah, it did actually. We're very pleased with how the niche business has finished for the year. The niche retail brands in Australia represent about $1.7 billion worth of TTV. So, I think overall that's about 20% now of our overall retail TTV in leisure in Australia. So that's obviously going very well, growing at a much faster rate, as you'd expect, than the traditional Flight Centre brand. Actually, I was just mentioning to Skroo at Hayden this morning, a brand that we don't speak a lot about is a brand called Travel Money, which is now almost the largest, so currently the second largest independent foreign exchange business in Australia. We've got 64 shops around the country now, which is dramatically up on where we were only a few years ago. And with just under $400 million in TTV annually, that's our fifth largest turnover business in Australia. So, it's great to see, and that business was up about 38% in TTV terms last year. So some of these niche businesses are really developing at a very pleasing rate.
Fantastic. That's great.
And your next question comes from a line of James Bales of Morgan Stanley. Please ask your question.
Oh, hi, guys. My question's actually been addressed, but basically, if you look over the last few years, you guys have beaten guidance and estimates on a story of margin expansion. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you've got 8 to 10% store growth penciled in for next year and pretty similar PBT. Is that story coming to an end, or is there going to be more leverage long term?
James, no, this is a never-ending story. we're reasonably, as you can imagine, with 2,500 shops and business teams, even an 8% growth is a couple of hundred. And these are not that easy when you consider Australia's half our business, so that at least 100 of these have to come in Australia. We can certainly got plenty of growth opportunities in corporate. Leisure is a little bit harder. But I think you'll see our story is changing a bit, and what Mel spoke about from being an agent or a middleman to being a retailer, and we're not just talking about leisure here, we're talking about corporate as well, gives us a lot of opportunities to continue to grow the sort of market we can participate in. It might be travel related, but I think there's plenty of opportunities as we move from just being a simple agent. Flano originally came from the country, so he's quite a simple guy, but we do want to have a more complex service and product offering, which with as a retailer, and a lot of this product will be our own product. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for continued growth, and I think you've heard too that in the overseas we have hardly touched the, in the UK with getting up towards £1 billion of sales, we're probably 1 or 2% of the market there, and the same in the States. So plenty of opportunity there. The challenge is to grow in profitable parts of the business, of course.
James, the other thing I'd add to Skroo's comments is, we constantly benchmark ourselves not only to other travel retailers here in Australia, but around the world and other retailers generally. And, certainly our net margin is much superior to many online players and to many traditional bricks and mortar players. But there are other groups out there around the world with a better net margin than us, Priceline being one. What if in Australia, Webjet in Australia, net margin wise, and then TUI Group in the UK. And, you know, some of those are online, some of those are traditional bricks and mortar operators, and there's other things for us to learn and as far as how we structure our business and use technology to get more cost efficiency. So, like Screw said, I think, you know, that natural growth opportunity plus the opportunity to do things much smarter still means there's plenty of opportunity for us out there.
Yes, thanks, guys.
And your next question comes from a line of Armina Soman of JP Morgan. Please ask your question.
That was a good attempt on my name. It's Amina here from JP Morgan. In the first half, you incurred $1.7 million in legal costs relating to the ACCC, $1 million in brand investment, and $2 million, which I think was the creditors issue in South Africa. Just wondering whether any further costs on those fronts taken. Obviously, the ACCC costs are done, but on the other fronts?
Sorry, is the question fundamentally, is there any other one-offs in the result, Amina?
Yeah, fundamentally.
Yeah. We try not to break them out too much, to be honest, because in any given year, it's going to be something we didn't expect. And, you know, I don't think there's anything we'd highlight. I mean, we touched on before some bad debts expense that we experienced this year that, you know, we haven't historically. You could argue they're one-off, but, you know, that's the nature of business. And I think that'd be a crazy thing to actually treat them as one-off. So I don't think there's anything worth highlighting that you haven't already touched on. So I'm sure you're just looking for something to prevent me asking about how Parramatta went on the weekend, is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. I was hoping to avoid that. I'm going to continue to move along, actually, just to avoid that question. You've talked about being over-inquired in the past. With the productivity improvements that you have put through, are you now meeting inquiry levels, or would you still say you're being over-inquired?
I have a view, and I think that we do need to increase our marketing spend in leisure, perhaps considerably, and that's one of the things that we are looking at and we are actually doing at the moment. We're certainly not, I don't think anyone would say we're over-inquired in most of our leisure brands now anyway, so we're putting a lot of focus on our advertising to... Yeah, it's probably one of those things that we'd like to be over-inquired this year. But hopefully, you know, obviously the travel market is seasonal, and it depends on which part of the season is. Generally, traditionally, that happens in January, February. So it's not been a problem for us in the last few months anyway.
Okay, sure. And just lastly, obviously Jet Set's rebranding their retail base to Hello World. I know, you know, they haven't been, you know, a great competitor for you over the past couple of years, but are you foreseeing any impact to your leisure business from that?
Look, not really. We sort of wish them luck, I guess, because I think I've said before, it is important for us, I think, that we have a strong bricks and mortar travel sector, and they're obviously a fairly large player in that. So it's important to us, I think, for the continued growth of our sector that we do have good competition. And we don't want them to be too good, but we would like them to be fairly good. And hopefully, with their rebranding and that, it will perhaps stimulate things a little bit too. But I suppose we wish them best of luck with that.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's all from me.
And your next question comes from a line of Mark Younger of Goldman Sachs. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Guys, are you able to give us a feel for what your global level of TTV is coming through your online sites?
Yeah, look, we can, Mike. It's still pretty modest. So I think around $600 million with all our different sites combined. So, you know, out of $14.3 billion, it's still a very small portion. Having said that, we flagged at the half year, and it's still true now, that the online business in Australia, with the new products available and new look and feel, is still doing very well, you know, 20-odd percent improvement year on year. So, but as we've always said, it's not about an online story for us. It's about a blended model to provide that maximum convenience to our customers.
Sure. And would Australia be broadly 400 of the 600 in TTV?
Probably more than that, mate. Probably more like 500, I'd say.
Okay. Your UK income margin has been choppy over the last several years. Can you talk to why that is?
Yeah, look, it obviously finished well this year. In particular, the second half was exceptionally good. Look, there's a few factors in play. The first one is the leisure business particularly did very well this year. In their leisure business over there, they include the SCBT business model. So that's the retail shops that really focus on those very, very small corporate customers. That's grown at a rapid rate, and with that has come very good margin growth. Generally speaking, the specialisation model that I have in the UK has also seen an improvement in the overall leisure commission rate. So that's been one factor. Another factor has been with the ongoing growth in that particular market, TTV growth, we've seen a lot of suppliers prepared to increase their return to us, which has been a great vote of faith. And so extra revenue has come from the override portion of their revenue mix. So they're probably the two main driving factors. I would flag, as I probably have with a couple of other items today, that the revenue margin in the UK is obviously very subjective to the competitive market, and obviously one of our some of their competition over there is not going to see that growth without trying to reduce their margins, and we're going to have to respond to that accordingly. So I probably think the UK margin this year is a bit of a high water mark, and you know, if you look at the segment note, it shows it's 14.6% for the year. Last year it was 13.6. I think, you know, around that 13.8, 14% margin is probably a fair expectation going forward.
Okay. You've spoken quite a bit about putting on a lot more BDM guys for your corporate business. What's the typical time frame for these guys to cover their costs?
Generally, it just depends on which side of the which part of the market they're in. We have three basic models in our corporate offering. One's FCM, which is the large, so generally multinationals. Then the SME, which is corporate traveller, and SCBT is the very small SMEs. So obviously, it depends which part of the market the BDM is working in. But so for a very small SME, they could get going quite well in 3 months, but it could take up to 12 months for the multinational wins to start coming through in FCM brands. So anywhere between 3 and 12 months. But yeah, we have been growing our BDM numbers probably over the last 3 to 6 months reasonably well. So we're hoping to get some benefits from that, you know, pretty soon anyway.
Okay. Last question for me. FX gain was around $10 million this year. Should we view that as just being a natural offset to the negative impact on the segmental results as they're translated back?
Yeah, there's definitely a function of that. But also, as the Aussie dollar's weakened in recent months, we've seen that the benefit of us having our foreign exchange contracts in place for the wholesale part of the business as well. I wish I could tell you what that line's going to look like this time next year, Mike, but as you know, predicting currency is a very difficult thing for us to do. So we obviously manage our FX exposures the best we possibly can, and we think we've got a pretty good process. It's a combination of factors this year.
Okay, thanks very much, guys.
Your next question comes from a line of Tony Sinner of Selector Funds Management. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi guys. Look, just a question on the margins that you've been able to deliver, and I think I did note what Andrew noted in terms of the long term perhaps net margin of 2.5%. But unless you've got other costs in there, I struggle to see how you're going to keep that margin at 2.5, considering the TTV growth you've been able to experience or deliver, and also your bottom line or your EBIT growth even this year of 18%. So other than perhaps more investments across the field and perhaps more spending in marketing, et cetera, is that 2.5% that you've noted, Andrew, is that just something that you feel conservative about, or do you feel that it's more than achievable?
Look, I think it's a bit of a stretch target for us, Tony, but you know how we operate. We like to put aggressive targets out there and aim high, and if you come slightly short, then you're probably still better off than where you would have otherwise have been.
Look, I touched on it earlier, and obviously 70% of our cost base is people related, and for us to achieve that type of margin can't be got at without actually having a more efficient people cost. And as I mentioned before, we've touched on the corporate part of our business this year. There's other areas that potentially we can make a bit more efficient. But that targets over a couple of year period, I would think. And like I say, there's no one particular area that we'll focus on. Obviously, there has to be one. It will come from increments, but I feel confident that we can probably get there. But it is a bit of a stretch.
And just the global, your headquarters up in Brisbane, that's now been agreed with in terms of where you're going, or where are you with that, sorry?
Well, I can confirm we're staying in Brisbane. Does that help?
Yes.
No, look, we've got a short list of some very good properties, and we're still speaking to both groups. And, when final terms have been agreed with one or the other, then we'll obviously announce to the market.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Baden Moore of CLSA. Please ask your question.
Hi, guys. Most of mine have been answered, but I had one more detailed question just on your segmental numbers. Your statutory EBITDA in other segment has improved by about 10 mil. Is that the FX gains washing through, or can you give any detail on that?
Yeah, I can give you detail on that. It's not very sexy, Baden, but it's the facts. During the course of the year, we did a bit of a restructure with some of our overseas operations, and one of the outcomes of that was a dividend that flows through to the revenue part of that other segment note, with the corresponding expense associated with that flowing through to the rest of the world note. So that equates to about $7 million, which accounts for most of that change.
Thanks, guys.
And your final question comes from the line of Alex Patrikios of AAP. Please ask your question.
Hi, how are you? Look, I just, like the previous caller, most of mine have been answered, but I was just noting in your report that it says that the reliance on the Australian market has decreased, but the international market has widened a lot. I'm wondering if that's a result of like a direct strategy, or if that's just a natural kind of broadening of the profit base.
Yes, Alex, look, we have been, we would like to get our reliance on the Australian market more broad-based with our overseas countries, and certainly in terms of our sales, I think Australia's just over half that now. The main issue we have is that Australia's still providing a significant part of our profits, I think about nearly 70% of our profits. Mm-hmm. So we're still a long way to go in terms of growing of overseas, not only in sales but in profits as well. But that doesn't mean to say we necessarily want that to be a higher percentage of the total profits. We're happy as long as Australia keeps growing its profits, and the opportunities here are still quite strong, we believe.
Okay, that makes sense. And I'm not sure if it's if you might be able to answer this or not, but considering we don't know what the outcome of the ACCC case is, if it's unfavourable, would that affect your fiscal results for next year at all?
No, it wouldn't. If we do lose, there are probably appeal processes, and even if we do lose, eventually, we believe the fines probably won't be very onerous anyway. If that's what happens, so we're pretty comfortable with it, and we are expecting a result sometime in the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. And maybe just finally, like very, very nitty-gritty kind of question, but just for my own benefit, in the report it says that there were 2,481 stores opened at this stage, but then in another point it says that, in the presentation of the different slides, it says that you opened your 2,500th shop in fiscal year 13.
Yeah, Alex, the 2,481 is the June 30 figure, in the financial year, and then in July we opened extra stores, which got us to the 2,500.
Oh, that makes sense. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
No worries.
And there are no further questions from the phones at this time. Please continue.
Thank you very much, guys, for dialing in. If you have any other questions, please give me a call or shoot me an email. And hope to catch up with a lot of you next week when we're in Sydney and Melbourne. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.